Harlots of History contains explicit language, overtly sexual themes, and sensitive subject matter. Listener discretion advised.
Welcome to Harlots of History, a show by women for everyone, except children and pets, including our own. The show is created by our love of the shadier, inventive, and bold women, men, and non-binary humans that you cannot find in the history books.
We will be exploring and educating ourselves, and hopefully our listeners, on infamous mistresses, lovers, sex workers, courtesans, madams, vamps, sirens, and of course, harlots. We will delve into their past, sordid or honorable, discussing the era that they happen to live in and the problems of the times.
Be ready for some controversial figures. You may be surprised at how many harlots in history you end up loving or at least begrudgingly respect.
So sit back, grab a fizzy drink, some salty snacks, and have some fun listening to Harlots of History, taking back the word harlot one episode at a time. All right, welcome to Harlots of History.
Sorry, I'm so excited. So exciting.
Ugh. It's really exciting. We had a really hard time coming up with our name because our very first name we couldn't use. And
totally. I'm a mama harlot. You're a pet mama harlot. We're harlot.
Yep. I'm Emily, and I'm a stay-at-home dog mom and out-of-work bartender.
That is the part I love the most.
I know. All right, and who are you?
And I'm Kara Mia. I am a mom of three, and I stay at home, but that's not my only identifier.
No.
It's just one of many.
Yes. Many. Okay, so I didn't pair cocktail with this episode, the episode is Madame de Pompadour,
which I'm so excited for because she is like the original inspiration behind this podcast.
Yeah, she is.
Mm-hmm.
She is. This is like a concept that we came up with a couple months ago. I actually have these bar glasses that were gifted to me by a patron at the restaurant that I used to work at, where Kara Mia and I actually met. And they are these like gold plated glasses that have famous mistresses on them. So when Kara Mia and I wanted to do a podcast, we didn't know what the topic was. And those glasses were definitely our inspiration as I was drinking wine out of them at noon, packing to move into my new apartment. For the 27th time. Right now, I didn't pair a cocktail with this, but I am drinking a wine spritzer, and the base of that spritzer is Sauvignon Blanc, which generally has grapefruit notes, and grapefruit is also known as pamplemousse in French, and pamplemousse pompadour, so it connects.
That is an amazing stretch. It connects. It's a stretch, but it's good.
It connects because I was at the liquor store and I bought two boxes of wine yesterday because I was like, I don't want to leave my house. I know. I figured I might as well stock up.
Mm-hmm.
And Kara Mia is drinking a scotch out of a snifter.
So I'm fancy.
She's very fancy. Okay, so let's hop into the way, way back machine and go to the 1700s. So Kara Mia, what do you know about Madame de Pompadour?
I know that she was obviously the mistress of, I can't remember if it was like Louis the 13th or the 14th. I think it was the
15th.
15th. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I just know that she was a larger than life personality. Obviously, her hairstyle contributed a lot to history. She's known for that. I know she had an extremely expensive taste in clothes and jewels, but I also know that she was very smart and savvy, like politically.
Okay, stop telling my podcast. Madame de Pompadour definitely was liked the nicer things in life, but in the sense of culture. So what I knew about her was not much, just that I just had heard the name when I wanted to do her. And then also, they also portrayed her in a Doctor Who episode. And I was going to watch it, but they took Doctor Who off Netflix. And I actually consider getting a subscription for HBO Max.
It's amazing. Do it.
You have it?
Yeah.
What? Why can't I borrow your password?
You can.
Oh, HBO Max. Don't listen. Okay, so, I should have watched it, but I had watched it. It was just a long time ago. So anyway, Madame de Pompadour was born Jean Antoinette Poisson, which means fish in French, on December 29th, 1721. Her parents were François Poisson, who was 37, and Madeleine de Lamotte, who was 23. So it was rumored that her mother's husband was not her biological father, and that her biological father was Charles Francois Paul Lenormand de Tournahan.
Amazing pronunciation.
Yeah. I took Spanish in high school. Obviously, that name is a mouthful, so I can see why her mom just wanted to play it safe with the last name Poisson. I'm wetting my whistle. Okay. Francois was a tax farmer, and I just have exclamation mark, point, question mark.
I mean, I know it's probably like a misnomer a little bit, but like when you just say tax farmer.
I looked into it, and I like looked into what a tax farmer was, and then I was just like, I don't really care, but it's just a cool name. So he became her legal guardian when she was 4, and her father was forced to flee the country because he had unpaid debts, which at the time in France was punishable by death. So when she was 5, she was sent to an Ursuline convent. So that's basically just a very specific order of Catholic nuns. She came down with whooping cough when she was 9, came home, and her mother took her to a fortune teller, I presume to ascertain if the cough would kill her.
I mean, even whooping cough today can be super scary. Dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they even said that Madame de Pompadour had side effects from whooping cough, you know, her whole life. So the fortune teller, Madame Le Bon, divined that Jean would capture the heart of the king when she was older. So they began to call her Renée, which means like Renette, like R-E-I-N-E-T-T-E.
Queen or something?
Yeah, the little queen.
Yeah.
Which is cute. And then they started to prepare her to later become the king's mistresses at age 9, which is not cute.
Oh, that's healthy.
Yeah. So he was already married. He was 11 years older than she was. So basically from the time that she was, you know, 9 years old, she was being prepared for this as she's just entering her early adolescence.
Goodness.
I know. So pretty much her whole life, she was destined or made to believe that she was destined for this one role. And I do believe in fortune tellers, but I also like kind of wonder if that may have been a plant to get her to that point. I mean, it could have been, it really could have been either way. Like she could have been seeing a fortune. I think a lot of fortune tellers at that time
just told people what they wanted to hear.
Yeah. So it's hard to tell. Yeah. And I'm not saying like, I actually really do believe in that, but I do think that there's a lot of people who take advantage of that. So regardless, that fortune teller definitely shaped her history. So her adopted dad hired many instructors to instruct her in things that mistresses need to know, which was dancing, painting, engraving, theater, arts, and memorizing entire plays.
Because there's nothing more that a man wants to hear in foreplay than like you reciting all of, what is it, like
Tale of Two Cities or...
No, that wasn't written yet. That's what I was trying to think of. Oh,
Shakespeare. Shakespeare.
No, Shakespeare was...
Othello.
No, he was...
Yeah. He was in the 1500s. This is 1700s. Right. Yeah, right. Othello.
Yeah, totally.
I do like it. Okay. Yeah, she's like, all right, we'll get to it, but just hold on. Let me recite this play for 5 hours.
And all these unique... If I had to recite a play before, like as, you know, foreplay, I would do Macbeth. Just so I could see boil, toil, toll, and trouble, whatever that is. I love that.
You should just start saying that in general. It's
right, to everyone.
Boil.
It's my greeting. Boil, toil.
Cauldron, boil, and toil. God damn it. I don't know what it is. So considering the magnitude to which mistresses at this time played a role in the political sphere of the men, and we will get into that later, he would have been better off getting her lessons in finances, politics, and humanitarian practices. So agreed. I went into some, yeah. I went into several different deep dives of Louis' mistresses because I just wanted this episode. It is about Madame de Pompadour, but generally I wanted to generalize about, you know, mistresses at the time. And that was what wanting to look into this. Yeah, they had a huge role. And that was a huge part of me looking into these different women as well. So the role of the mistress to the king and to other powerful men served as being more than a sexy side piece. They were seen as integral into political persuasion and were often chosen as more of a partner than the wives, who were just chosen for their royal blood and baby making skills. Many wives of kings did not have much influence over the decision making, or if they did, they were quickly replaced by those of the next shiny mistress that appeared. So I'm just going to call her Pomp from now on.
Yeah, do it.
Pompadour is a lot. That's how I have her in my notes. So at age 19, Pomp married Charles Guillaume Lenormand de Tol, the 21-year-old nephew of her guardian. So they weren't technically related by blood, but I feel like a lot of our episodes have had people that are like related by blood.
almost, and like, there's not really bad blood, but they're still like almost too close for comfort.
Yeah. It's kind of how in Clueless, Cher marries her ex-stepbrother, or like,
which is so freaking weird.
It's weird. I've always had a problem with that ending.
Always.
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 Right? Okay. Thank you. I was like, it's really cute because if he was just any other person, you'd be like, oh, like Paul Rudd's really cute and dorky.
He was like your brother for years. That's weird.
Oh, yeah, I don't like it. The match was very beneficial to them both, and especially to the uncle, who, after this match, disinherited all of his other nieces and nephews and made Charles his sole heir. So the names do get confusing in this story because everyone basically has the same name. So I'll try to, if you ever get confused, just...
Okay, I will.
I tried to clarify who was who because half of his mistresses are either named like Marie or Louise. And then there's a lot of Charles. As part of her wedding gift, her guardian gave her the estate at Atoll, which was nestled on the edge of the hunting grounds of the Forest of Sindar, where the king frequently led hunting parties, which...
How freaking nice is it to get an estate as a wedding present, as a present in general?
I know.
But it was his hunting. It was where the king liked to have hunting parties.
Yeah, so I feel like it was a very strategic.
Very, like, okay. That's conniving.
It is very conniving. I mean, a lot of the marriages at this point were just, you know, they weren't for love.
Vintageous. Yeah.
Yeah, except for this one.
No.
Her new husband, Charles, was madly in love with her. And she said, I love you too, and I will never leave you, except for the king.
He was on her list, you know.
Yeah.
That list. So,
yeah, the laminated list. It's like, it's like the king. I don't know who else would be on it. Brad Pitt. When I looked into Charles, his Wikipedia page claimed that he is best known for being Madame de Pompadour's husband, which I love. That was like
perfect. Yeah, you
I know.
It's very rare to see that reversal.
Yes, exactly. So he didn't really lead much of an extraordinary life. He was a finance guy like his uncle, and he was, I know, he was really, really committed to his wife. It was actually kind of sad because I feel really bad for him. They were married in 1740. He was very in love with her. And in 1745, after she met the king, Louis tried to make her husband an ambassador to Turkey to get him out of the way. But he was like, no. And so Louis basically forced him to legally separate his wife, which, like, sending what? Husbands and lovers. I know. It's really, really sad. I feel really bad for this guy. But
me too.
Yeah. So he went to Paris and he was heartbroken and he felt like he was betrayed and he never forgave her.
He was, what did they call him? A cuckold?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she did warn him that she would leave him for the king, but still.
In all fairness, yes, she did.
Yeah. But still, I mean, imagine that hanging over your head. So he had affairs with other ladies and I think had several children, but he never actually married until after Pomp died 20 years later.
Mm.
And he kind of quietly married his wife and they lived at this their like house, you know, peacefully. He was briefly imprisoned during the Reign of Terror with his wife, but he was released and then he ended up dying peacefully at home at age 81, which is basically all anyone can ask for.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he found love again. And he lived to 81, which I like was really old.
It's just like ripe old age back in those days.
I know.
Elders in the village were like 45.
I know. It's past even the expected life expectancy of now.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the average life expectancy like 70s? 75?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Charles and Pomp had two children, a son, he died as an infant, and a daughter, Alexandrine, who died at age 9, which is really unfortunate that is extremely common at this time to have children that didn't live very long. The name Alexandrine is very, very pretty. I feel like it's a kind of original for back then, but I really like it. Because Jean was married, she could go to the salons and make him a frequent visitor. So salons actually like came up with
and my research. Jean is Madame Pompadour, correct?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to call her that. I kind of switch in and out of Jean and Madame Pompadour, but I don't think there's any other Jeans in here. So, okay. So I went into salons a little bit because I didn't really know anything about them. So basically they were gatherings that were held by a socialite host. They were invented in Italy in the 1500s and became popular in France in the 16 and 1700s. Basically they were just a definition of white privilege because it was all these rich people, you know, hanging out and talking about intellect. The word salon originated in France in 1664. And before that, people referred to the gatherings by the rooms they were held in. So they'd be called kitchens and living rooms.
Oh, that's cute.
I know. But they actually were usually held in the bedroom. And the lady host would lounge on the bed and everyone would sit in chairs around her.
That sounds amazing.
I know.
That sounds so nice.
To be the host, I feel like it'd be weird if you were just sitting in the chair, like, while someone was relaxing on a bed.
It's like the only time that's happened to me is like after I've had a baby.
Next time you have a baby, we'll have a salon for you.
We'll call it a bedroom.
Bedroom. Their purpose was to hold intellectual conversations. They basically just, it was a bunch of she people. So Pomp frequented many salons and eventually created her own. One of the salons she went to was Madame de Tencin's. She's really not important to the story, but I get really ADD when I research and go off on tangents and like try to look at aspects I don't know anything about. So I looked at her and she was actually kind of interesting. She was the mother of a philosopher, but he was an illegitimate son that she left on the church stairs a few days after his birth. She had become a nun like years back, but obviously she broke her vows.
Obviously.
Yeah. One of her many lovers committed suicide at her house and she was imprisoned at the Bastille, but later acquitted. Again, not important, but it's just kind of like really interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
It is. Pomp frequented these salons with her best friend, Voltaire, who seems like a very depressing guy to hang out with. Yeah, he was like her best friend. Well, that's, I don't know if he's the best friend, but...
I mean, whatever. Like, that's some pretty impressive street cred.
Yeah, it's okay. They're best friends. I decided. So, a bunch of other random people. Well, not random. They were big names, but Cardinal de Bernis, Caribbean Phils, and Montesquieu. So Montesquieu's big contribution to the society was he got the word despotism into rotation. So that was like a really random piece of information. And despotism is a government where one person rules with absolute power. So I will use it in a sentence. Trump is a despotism.
That doesn't even... Trump rules as a despotism. I don't even know.
Despot?
I get... Yeah. He's a despot. Yeah, that's a word.
Yeah, he's done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pomp honed her wit and conversation skills at these salons and became famous for these as well as her beauty. She attracted the attention of Louis in around 1742, but they did not meet until 1744. So he was leading a hunting party near
the real
his house.
Slow game.
Yeah. She's doing the long con. He was leading a hunting party near her house and she was allowed to go, but she had to follow at a distance. But she was basically just like, fuck that. I'm going to fulfill my destiny. And she drove her car directly into the path. And by car, I mean phaeton, which is a fancy open concept carriage. I have a picture of an American one in my notes. So if you want to look at the pictures, and it's going to be different than what these look like. Mm-hmm. But that one I thought was funny because it was it's called the Spider. And it just reminds me of when I had that convertible that was called the Spider.
That's right.
Yeah. She drove by in a blue carriage with a pink dress, changed, and then drove back in a pink carriage while wearing a blue dress.
Oh my gosh, I've heard this story. That's so extra.
I know. That was like my favorite part. So he sent her a deer he shot and killed to show off his toxic masculinity. He already had a mistress at this point, which was actually kind of an official job. So
yeah, there was like a royal mistress that was like an official position, correct?
Yeah, I know, which is so weird. So, but she decided to... She died in December of that year. So there was an opening. Get it?
You were just waiting for that. You were just waiting for that pun.
I literally
had a good one. It's a good one. It's a good one. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So, okay. His mistress at the time was Marie Anne de Mali Nesle, the original founder of Nestle. That's not true. It's like the Friends episode where Phoebe's grandmother's cookies.
Oh my gosh. That one makes me like, I would be so angry at her.
Nesle? Yeah. So Marie Anne is his mistress. And Marie is also the name of his wife. So we're talking about the mistress he had right before Pom at this point. So Marie was born in 1717. So she's 2 years older than Pom. And she was the youngest of five sisters, four of whom became the king's mistresses. He was keeping it all in the family.
He loved the family lineage. Yes.
Yeah, I guess so. So there's a weird picture of her nipping out while holding a flaming broomstick. So that's the first picture that I have. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I think it's really weird. Or it's the second picture.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a flaming broomstick. That's a torch, right?
It's a flaming broomstick.
What?
I don't know. It could be a torch. That actually makes more sense. But it looks like a flaming broomstick to me. She's a witch.
I think everyone's a witch.
Everyone is a witch. We all have an inner witch. I Yeah, I put several of the ladies on the picture on the photos just because I think they look all the same. So there's her, and then the other ones, like as we get into them, but I also have his wife and then her down there too. Marie's oldest sister, Louise Jean, was the king's very first mistress after 8 years of devotion to his wife. Louise was a sweet little lamb, and she introduced all her sisters at court because it made them happy. Those duplicitous bitches really only wanted to be introduced to the king so they could become his mistress. Also, I'm not negating the fact that Louis was also complicit in sleeping with these four sisters, but the sisters definitely had a political agenda as well.
Mm-hmm.
Louise wasn't really politically inclined, and she just was madly in love with him. One of her sisters, I think the first one to become a mistress, died after giving birth to his illegitimate heir, who they called Demi Louis, which means aww, small Louis, because he so resembled his father.
Aww.
I don't know. I didn't actually read what happened to him, but he was illegitimate, so he never ended up becoming an heir. Mm-hmm. But after her death, a mob broke into the place where her body was being stored, and they mutilated her corpse.
What?
Because she was, because she was, quote unquote, the king's whore. And then I just have insert rant about the term whores here. And I could get into a really long rant. But I just, it bothers me. I mean, it bothers, I'm sure, everyone. But of course it would be on her, and it has nothing to do with him.
Him. Like, okay, a king totally has no choice in who he takes to love him.
I also have a big problem with the word whore as a derogatory term. Because, like, as you know, I was like, I think we should take back slut. But I think whore is, like, it's just people always use it. And it's, like, a term for women who use their sexuality like a man would. And mm-hmm. it's stupid. So
someone who a woman who threatens men
mm-hmm.
by
mm-hmm.
her lifestyle. Yep.
Yep, that's what it is. So the death as well as the mutilation of her body was obviously devastating to Louis as well as to the sisters. And this is where Marie Anne came to court, so his mistress. But I feel the Louis was obviously not great. Like he was kind of terrible, but he actually, I do believe, kind of loved these women in his own weird way. I think that, I mean, he was obviously hopping between them, but I think a lot of them he did care about, again, in his weird way. And I'm not
the best
condoning
king, but
him.
He wasn't the worst king.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't the worst king, but he also wasn't great. But there's also a lot of terrible dictators out there, so not being the worst king is not really saying much. Louise was very compliant to the king, but nobles of the court wanted a more influential mistress who could steer him away from Cardinal Fleury, who was his advisor, and a lot of people hated him and tried to oust him.
Yeah, like I remember, he was extremely powerful.
Yeah, he was very powerful. He basically controlled everything the king did. And the kings at this point were just the figurehead. I mean, everyone was vying for attention and vying for power. It was insane.
Waiting in line to wipe the king's butt, literally.
Mm-hmm. It was like a Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole show of Scandal. So Fleury would only officially approve of mistresses and wives who had very little political agenda and who he saw as no threat to his power. When Marie came to court, she had little interest in the king at all because she was in love with another man. Louis, like the scheming douchebag he is, conspired with her lover's uncle to send the lover away to be killed in battle.
What?
But it backfired. Yeah. It backfired, which isn't that like a Shakespeare play? I know it's a biblical, like they happened in the Bible, but I think it's also like something in Shakespeare. So, or maybe that happened in Shakespeare in Love. I don't know. They sent her away to the Americans.
Way different than Shakespeare, but still related.
I mean, it's basically the same thing. That movie is such a good movie. I want to go watch it when we're done.
So, I don't like Gwyneth Paltrow very much.
I mean, she was okay back then before she found a goop, and now she's just a goob.
Oh, amen.
Yeah, no, I don't like her either, but I feel like she was non-problematic back then.
She wasn't
I feel
like smelling, she wasn't selling candles that smell like her vagina then.
Oh my God.
Look it up. She's doing it now.
What?
Yeah.
No, she's not.
She's selling candles on Goop that said, "This candle smells like my vagina. This candle smells like my orgasm."
Yeah. Oh my God. I would never want a candle like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would never want to smell that ever. Oh my God. Okay. All right, Gwyneth, you're dead to me. That's gross. I mean, I didn't like her anyway, but that's problematic. So Louis sends this lover away. Like the lover's uncle's like, yeah, let's do it. But it backfires. So the lover returns as a celebrated war hero. So Louis's like, fuck.
That's a waste. It's so screwed up. That's awesome.
I know. And then, but the uncle's like, no, it's fine. We can still do this. So then they sent him to Languedoc, where they basically hired a woman to seduce him and then showed the love letters between them to Marie, who was like, what the hell? And then finally accepted the king's advances, which is so stupidly manipulative.
So manipulative. It's crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. Again, like, not Louis is totally a monster, but she wasn't interested in him sexually or romantically. And she used pretty much the only power that women had at the time, her sexuality, to leverage him into making her a duchess, which, I mean, yeah, you go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Her list of demands was long, know your worth, but one of them including kicking her sister out of court, which is not cool. Louis tried several times, but Louise would always break down crying and he would concede to letting her stay a few days longer every time. So eventually Marie threw down an ultimatum and Louise was 86 from court. So he was a pretty big asshole to her too before she left court when he was trying to get Marie on as his lover, because once his attention waned, he tried everything he could to distance from her, including talking exclusively at their meals about how much he wanted her sister, which is a dick move.
Yeah.
And Marie's big contribution to society was that she invented nicknames and they were all terrible. Yeah, that was like, no, she had other things too, but that was her thing, is she's like, oh, everyone's going to have a nickname. And they would just go around calling everyone these like terrible nicknames. Like, her nickname was the princess, which is stupid.
That's really dumb. That's real creative.
Yeah. So when Fleury died in 1743, she took over as the king's advisor and she essentially became France's ruler. So not in law, but in practice.
This was
the mistress before Madame.
Okay, Comptor. That's what I thought. Marie. Okay.
Yeah. Marie Anne. Yeah. So again, I wanted to touch on how much power behind the scenes was accorded to the mistresses at the time. They may not have been able to have the official titles of wives and they were looked down on because the sons they bore were not legitimate heirs. And thus they served no purpose to the rich white men who governed by their rule over a woman's body. But the mistresses were a crucial part to the history of France, and they should be remembered more as political advisors than as sexual ones.
Mm.
Louis briefly, yeah, right? Yeah, that there's, they had so That's much control,
yeah.
And a lot of them were
Influence,
like ruling.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were basically his rulers because he didn't really have much. I mean, he did have power, but it was all kind of a name. Louis briefly had a change of heart when he became ill while at war and sent Marie and her other sister away, who had come to have a threesome with him at war, and he called for his wife. So basically he just thought he was dying and he was trying to repent so he wouldn't be sent to hell. And this is actually something that he had done more than once whenever he was like on his deathbed. But as soon as he knew he wasn't dying, he like sent his wife back away and then went back to
the debaucherous ways.
Yes. But when Marie and her sister had been sent away, like for the brief time that he had, you know, renounced her, they were attacked by a blood-hungry mob and their carriage was stoned.
What?
Yeah. So being an official mistress afforded some protection, but an unofficial mistress or an ousted one was a dangerous and deadly job. She was I think pretty quickly after she was restored. And many feared that she would get revenge for the way she was treated when Louis was trying to be a good person for 30 seconds. And it didn't last. He didn't do a good job. So she died of stomach pains right after her arrival.
Poisoning?
Yeah, she thought it was poisoning. She said on her deathbed, it may or may not have been poisoning. Also, like, there were so many other factors that could have contributed to it at the time. I think that it's probably very possible that she was poisoned, because I think that was but again, speculating. She also could have just, you know, there's poor hygiene and rampant bacteria back then.
Right. Oh, she could have gotten like the most gnarliest food poisoning.
Oh, I know. But I think it also makes sense because I feel like people got poisoned a lot back then. You don't really hear about that now. I know. I think it's maybe because we know about poisons.
And also nobody cooks for anybody anymore.
I do. I cook all the time.
I was being sarcastic. I do too.
Yeah. I was like, we both cook, but I'm not poisoning anyone. I'm not poisoning anyone.
Say that one more time to convince yourself.
So I just want to talk a little bit right now about Louis and his wife, and then we'll get back to Madame de Pompadour.
Okay.
So Louis XV was born in 1710, and he took over from his more famous Greek grandfather, Louis XIV. So Louis XIV and Louis XVI were...
Was Louis XIV the Sun King?
Yes, I think so. So he took over from him when he was only 5 years old. And his great-grandfather, Louis XIV, he ruled for 72 years. So that was the longest in French history. And it's a long time. So Louis XV was fourth or fifth in line for the throne, but everyone died of measles or smallpox within like a pretty short period of time. He was actually saved by his nanny when he and his brother both had measles and the doctors were bleeding them. And his older brother died, but she refused to let the doctors draw any more blood. So, which is a solid choice on her part. And she ended up saving his life and cementing his place in the history books. But of course, we don't ever hear about her.
Yes. So I'm sure she was not given an estate or
I know. Like you just, yeah. So Louis was called Louis the Beloved, but that was basically just a name they gave him when he was five.
Because everyone's beloved when they're five.
Yeah. They're like, oh, he's so cute. But he didn't really do a good job of beholding it. So he went the Duke of Bourbon, which is the best name ever. And I want to be the Duchess of Bourbon. Was the king regent until he became, I think, 15 was when he was able to be king. So he married Marie, oh God, Leszczynska. Oh God, I'm so sorry. She's a 21-year-old daughter of a deposed Polish king. There's a lot of S's and Z's in this word. So this Marie we're talking about is his wife, which I think would be so confusing to have a wife and a mistress with the same name.
Actually, I think that's like a godsend.
Yeah.
You never have to worry about screwing up or shouting out someone's name during sex or whatever.
Can you imagine texting the wrong one, though? Being like, oh, I had such fun last night. And they're like, what are you talking about? I didn't see you last
night. In his case,
you're in Cleveland.
You're sending a messenger or a pigeon or...
He sends a messenger fox to the wrong room. Oh. The fox is really confused. The fox goes to the wrong room. So she was a 21-year-old daughter of a deposed Polish king. She didn't meet society's expectations of beauty, which are trash, but a lot of guys wanted to marry her because she was smart and nice and graceful, which I would like have such a hard time because I am such a klutz, so I obviously wouldn't be a good queen. Her financial issue raised a problem multiple times in marriage arrangements. There were originally 99 ladies on the list insert joke about 99 problems.
Right.
99 problems, but a queen ain't one. So the literal, like, minimum requirement.
Way too proud of that.
Was to be a Catholic princess. Like, that was, like, all you had to do to get on the list. And so she met that. She was taken off pretty quickly, but eventually put back on and chosen because she didn't have strong political ties and she wasn't really a threat to any of his advisors. So the Duke of Bourbon was the regent, and he was suggested as a match for Marie. And his lover, Madame Dupree, was cool with it because she didn't see Marie as a threat to her. When Louis became sick, though, all focus turned to finding him a new potential match because they wanted to have an heir and seal the royal line. He was engaged to an Spanish infanta who was still a child, and so she couldn't have kids for, like, several years. Yeah, it's so stupid. Like, as now, all these, like, rich white guys in a room telling women how their bodies should be used, which hasn't changed.
We haven't broken the cycle yet.
All right. We won't get into that. So the Duke of Bourbon and Madame Dupree wanted her because they thought that she would be indebted to them for elevating her social status to that of queen. And Flory was cool with it because he didn't see her as a threat to his power. So Louis and his wife, he was really excited to marry her. And he thought it was really cool that she was 7 years older than him. He thought he was, like, marrying, like, a cougar.
Cougar.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a picture of her with her son in the photos. It's mm-hmm. right next to the picture of him. And her son looks just like her. It's really, really cute. He's like a spitting image.
Yeah, it is cute.
So she had her first two children were twin girls. And then the next one was a girl. But her fourth child, she finally got it right. And had a son. Yeah, I know. It's so stupid. And I'm saying
we don't even need to talk about that. We all.
Yeah, I know.
They're the same.
Well, so their first two children, he was really excited about because I think they told him he couldn't have kids. So he was so happy. And then the next, he was like, oh, yeah, well, yay, I'm a father. We'll have a son next time. And then they didn't. And then he was sad. And which I just, so terrible being like a girl in that time and having just your birth be a disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Flory pretty much like put her on house arrest until she could have a son. He's like, you're not going anywhere. I know. Yeah. It's not great. So she had a son on the fourth try. All in all, she had 10 children, 8 of whom were girls. And there were only 2 boys. Only one of the boys survived, which was Louis. And he...
Please tell me all the girls survived.
I think 5. So 7 of the kids survived to adulthood. So 5 of the girls survived. Yeah. So a lot of them. So Louis got bored of her after 8 years, multiple pregnancies, and a refusal to indulge in the vapidness of other court ladies, such as the practice of wearing makeup, which is so stupid. That just makes me so mad. She had all these kids, and then it's like, he ditched her because of, yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Trash. After the birth of her daughter, Louise, the doctor said that another pregnancy could kill her. And so he was not allowed to come in her bedroom or come into her bedroom. She either
that was a good pun too.
Yeah. So she had 10 kids in the 1700s. Like, no shit. Stay the fuck out. Marie wasn't politically inclined and she attempted to get involved a few times. But I think Cardinal Fleury was like, told Louis, like, don't talk to her about court matters. Women shouldn't be involved. He really wasn't able to hold his own at court, the king, and he was always jumping women and getting distracted by the next shiny vagina. His mistress, Pix, became more political, partially because of or in spite of Fleury. His big legacy was the disaster of the Seven Years' War, which resulted in France's loss of many colonies in the New World, which is the tragic reason why none of us speak French. And it changed the course of history in the favor of drowned tea and tri-cornered hats.
Oh, yay.
Ugh, God. So in 1763, there were some policy changes to the way grain was exported and sold, which led to rumors that the government was trying to starve and consequently rid itself of the poor. And they called this a starvation pact. And that was one of the factors that led to the French Revolution. So a lot of the things that led to the French Revolution happened during this time. Okay, now we can get back to Madame de Pompadour. So soon after Marie Anne, the mistress, died, and after Louis had comforted himself by sleeping with her sister, he invited Jean to a mask ball. I know, he's a monster.
He's like, I ran through the whole family. And
yeah, except for one girl.
Hopefully she refused him.
Yeah, or like was marrying a really hot guy. Okay, so he invites her to this ball. She
Pompadour, correct?
Yes, Pompadour. She dresses as Diana the Huntress, which is an homage to their hunting encounter. Yeah. And he dresses as a tree.
Not so nice.
And I also put a picture of the tree that he dressed as on there.
A yew tree.
It's a yew tree. Yeah.
Rather so portly.
Yeah, it is. And you can, so it's like, you can kind of see how he would be able to do that because it was him and like 7 other dudes. So, oh my God, I almost just knocked over my wine for the second time today. The yew tree is actually known in Celtic tradition to symbolize death and resurrection. I don't know if those beliefs are shared by the French, but if you look at it that way, it's really interesting. Following the actual death of his mistress and the metaphorical resurrection in the form of Madame de Pompadour. So he publicly declared his affection for her after popping out of the yew tree disguise, which surprised no one. Yeah. I just imagine it like
where you the play king?
Hide. Yeah, like as a little kid and they're hiding behind a lamppost and you like can't giggling. Find them. They're like, yeah, like you can't find me. So within a few weeks, she had an apartment at Versailles above his. In order to be presented at court, she had to have a title. So that was a common thing with the mistresses. They had to have a title, and usually they were given like a quote unquote job, which was oftentimes
lady in waiting. Or
yeah, they were the queen's ladies in waiting, which is so messed up. Like the poor queen, I would be so mad. But that was a common practice back then. It doesn't make it right, but that's what a lot of people did. So he bought her the title of the Marquis of Pompadour, which is the Marquis is a nobleman. Mm-hmm. So it was like the Marquette, which is the woman. So she, Madame Pompadour, was one of the few who actually got on well with the queen, and she respected her and her position. According to an NPR article, Queen Marie supposedly lamented, quote, if there must be a mistress, better her than any, end quote.
Oh, that's a compliment.
Yeah, so, I know. Yeah. So I think, you know, she actually respected the queen and, you know, was very nice to her. So similarly to his last mistress, she yielded a lot of power in her position. And as his advisor, she basically became the prime minister. But of course, she didn't get the title. In 1755, an Austrian diplomat approached her to help forge the first Treaty of Versailles, which is a big deal at the time. And I was like, oh, I know that name. And it's not what I was thinking, which the Treaty of Versailles, that I think we know of, was the one that ended World War I.
World War I, yeah.
Yeah. So there have been 4 treaties. This one was the first one. So it created an alliance between France and Austria, which cemented their allegiance in the Seven Years' War, where France, Austria, and Russia fought Britain and Prussia. Pomp was pretty much blamed for the losing outcome, which resulted in the British control over the colonies. So that was 20 years before American, quote unquote.
And that was all pinned on her? Wow.
Yeah, a lot of it was. So that was right before the quote unquote American independence.
I can also see why kings wanted political mistresses now, because they have people to pin stuff on.
Yeah, I know. I heard the other day, I saw a thing, I posted on my Instagram, I don't know if you saw it, but it was Independence Day is white people's freedom from fancier white people.
I did see that.
I know, it's like really funny, pretty accurate. So Madame de Pompadour is widely remembered as a duplicitous schemer who used her feminine wiles to sleep her way into the position of prime minister. So basically like what we were talking about with Mata Hari earlier, that, you know, they just thought these women were like using their bodies to get power. You know, that's all they had at the time.
I honestly though have never heard someone sleeping themselves all the way up to prime minister. You have to have more than just sex to get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It really does a disservice to her, as everyone at Versailles was climbing all over each other to get to the top, as is really common with a power hierarchy. So singling her out is just not fair. She's less known as a lover of art, who helped cement Paris's place as a European epicenter of fine culture. She even bought a porcelain factory, learned how to engrave fine gemstones, and was a large influencer of the Rococo style, which is the ornamental architectural style that was really prevalent at Versailles.
It's very fluffy and bougie, yes. Whatever. It's very floofy, I guess I want to say.
It is very floofy.
Nice to look at from time to time.
Yeah, it's floofy. She was a prominent actress and would perform plays at her private theater in Versailles. So I guess those lessons in memorizing whole plays came in handy. She even had her own printing press and an extensive private library.
Cool.
Yeah, she was a really good artist, and there's a ton of stuff she did with engravings and like on stones and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, she like that was like one thing that they knew she loved the arts, so they didn't know like till recently that she. Yeah. So she appointed ministers who were able to create economic policies that pulled France out of bankruptcy and propelled it into its seat as the richest country in the world. She protected the Physiocracy School, which taught the economic theory that land agriculture was the center of wealth, and gave birth to the teachings of Adam Smith, who is the father of capitalism.
Mm.
She defended the Encyclopedia against critics, and allowed for its publication.
Wow.
She did all this while constantly fighting off her haters who resented her common upbringing and poked fun at her family name of Poisson. So, yeah, she did a lot. She was an outdoorsy travel chick who excelled in many feats, and she was able to do what many of the other mistresses were not, which was keep the king's attention. In 1750, so this is 5 years after she became the mistress, her role shifted from mistress to friend of the king due to the decline of her sexual appetite. The doctors tried their damnedest to fix her libido by feeding her mushrooms, celery, and vanilla. Vanilla. In a shocking twist, it didn't work. Maybe her sexual appetite decreased because she was having to endure recurrent bronchitis, spitting blood, constant headaches, the trauma and after effect of 3 miscarriages.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. An undiagnosed leucorrhea.
What's that?
So it is a thick white or yellow vaginal discharge, which is caused by an imbalance of estrogen. So as you can imagine, that would not put you in the mood.
Yes, I'm already out of the mood just listening to that.
I know. So this is a quote from an NPR article about Colombian art historian Susan Wager, who discovered a leather art portfolio containing Pompadour's etchings about 5 years ago. So I'm just going to read this passage. Quote, there's this famous line, "The king only loves you for your staircase," Wager says, referring to the circular staircase Louis constructed at Versailles to connect his room to his mistress's room. But I think it means so much more than that. This idea of the staircase as this mediating passage. She was mediating between members of the court and the king. They would say, I want to say this to the king. And she'd say, no, wait, let me tell him. Let me translate it into my own words and I'll come back to you. She was, in all sorts of ways, manipulating this idea of the staircase, of the passage. In an artistic, in an intellectual, and in a political way, end quote. Yeah, so she had a lot of political power, and she isn't remembered for that.
Yeah. Which, and she was just also a very creative, interesting person.
Yeah. And she did a lot for like the culture that we now know. She was a Renaissance woman. There was also religious pressure for Louis to cut ties with his mistress, which was another reason she friend zoned him.
Gotta love that Catholic Church.
Ugh. I know. My God. She loved him dearly and even accepted the happenings of the Parc au Cerf, or the aptly named Stag Park, which is a house where he would meet with his mistresses. She was quoted as saying, quote, "It is his heart I want. All these little girls with no education will not take it from me. I would not be so calm if I saw some pretty woman of the court or capital trying to conquer it," end quote. The rumors spread that Stag Park was like a giant harem where women were captured and kept for the king's pleasure, with Madame Pompadour as his actual madam. But according to historians, it was occupied by one woman at a time, and she accepted its existence, but didn't really have anything else to do with it. She died in 1764 from tuberculosis at only the age of 42.
Wow, she lived such a full life.
I know. She was so young, but she did a lot. Louis stayed by her bedside and nursed her while she was dying. He wasn't allowed, or decided not to, in accordance with custom, attend her funeral because she was a commoner. So, I mean, he was the king. He could have gone, I think.
And he could have also, like, on her dying bed, be like, "I make you the Duchess Marquis or Marquise or
you're
something.
You're my queen." Yeah.
Right, you could have made her something.
Yeah, I know. So he could have gone. Well, she was already a marquise, though. But I think it was because that title was just a title, and that because she was like born a commoner. I don't know. It was stupid. Classism at its finest. He was forced to watch some carrier casket away in the pouring rain while snow patrols chasing cars played in the background.
Oh, that set the scene. That set the scene for me.
Right? So he had a rough year, because a year after her death, his son and heir died of tuberculosis.
The only one, right?
Yes, but his son already had like three other sons at this point. So basically they're like, yeah, it's fine. The succession's secured. But he's like, that's my son. You know, I feel like grief at death at that point, you know, no, people weren't really allowed to grieve because death was such a common thing.
Yeah.
And then his wife, Marie, died a few years later. From heartbreak, and she never recovered from the rapid succession of deaths of her son, father, and then daughter-in-law.
Mm.
So I think she died in 1768. So Louis himself died in 1774 of smallpox after a 59-year rule, and that was second only to his great-grandfather.
Yeah.
So after his current mistress, Madame Du Barry, stayed by his side, regardless of the contagious nature of smallpox, he once again repented his sins on his deathbed and kicked her out before finally succumbing to the pox. All right, and then that's all I have. So
wow, she's just like, she's actually like pretty cool and normal for how infamous she is.
I know. It's the same thing that we were talking about with Mata Hari. If you look at the lives of the women behind what they were shown as, you get a bigger story than what we were just used to be seeing.
Right. And like, I don't know. Yeah. It's like weird, like how she was actually like pretty progressive for her time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, she was.
Yeah. And like the king even like loved her for more than just her, you know, body and her sexual appeal.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was really, really in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, like he was really vapid and not great, but I do think there was some part of him that did have love for these women. Mm-hmm. At some point, even if it wasn't long-lasting love.
Mm-hmm. Fleeting love.
Yeah.
He forever loved like a teenager.
Oh my gosh. His love lasted the length of a song.
Teenager.
Yep.
Well, good job. That was really interesting. I learned a ton. I didn't really know any of that.
Yeah. I learned a ton about this too. And that, I think that's like, you know, we're learning right along with everyone. So I think it's good for us.
After I'm done doing research for an episode, I feel like way more smarter than I did, way more intelligent than I did before I started researching.
I know. I do too. Mm. So do we want to talk about our happy thing?
Moment. Yeah, you go first.
Oh, okay. I don't have one picked out. Okay, so this is like, I don't know if this is a happy moment, but it's a very long story. But my partner he's got an autoimmune disorder where like mold spores he is very affected by them. So we're having an issue with some in our house right now. So we currently have one bed in one room, and then he's sleeping on an air mattress in the other room because it's the only thing that's not affected. So until we get a new mattress, we're having to figure it out. So last night we really wanted to watch a movie, but he can't come in the room with the bed that is like contaminated with mold spores. So we had to move the TV into his office and set ourselves up on this air mattress and just to watch a movie. It took like an hour to move everything.
But was it worth it?
It was.
And what movie did you watch?
We watched, it's a new one that just came out on Netflix. We didn't even finish it. It was The Old Order with Charlize Theron, or The Old Guard. We only got like halfway through, but I'll go. But yeah, it was good. So yeah, I just thought it was funny because we were laughing about like how much we have to do to just watch a movie at this point. But yeah.
Oh, that's sweet. That's cute.
Yeah.
Well, my happy moment is just from this week. We live pretty much on the east side of Seattle. So we live pretty close to the Cascades. And this week we discovered an alpine lake, and it was the most beautiful thing I had ever been to. The water was so clean, you could drink it. And we got to pull up our truck right to the edge of the water. And my son and I got to go wading through mountain streams and have just an amazing
day. I know that lake looks so cute.
Yeah, it was the highlight of my week.
I know. It looks so cute. I want to go there when I come visit. I know. Well, I'll try if we're allowed to leave our houses ever again.
Right? Oh, my God.
Oh, I know. I'm avoiding airplanes right now.
That's it for this week, though. I've got to go tend to my screaming children upstairs.
Oh, that sounds fun. Can you hear them?
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Our music is by Lloyd Rogers, and our cover art and our editing is by us. If you enjoyed listening, we would be tickled if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can always email us at harlotsofhistorypodcast@gmail.com. We will do our best to respond with something cute, snarky, or boring. We are also on Instagram and Twitter as Harlots of History. We love you all, even the haters. Bye.